Welcome to The Point. I'm Mindy Todd. The coronavirus was declared a pandemic by the World Health Organization, and we're under a state of emergency on both the federal and state level. Today, we're discussing the latest on how to keep the virus from spreading, supports and services to help those in need, and how to cope with the stress and anxiety associated with the virus and the economic impact. Joining us on the phone is Sean O'Brien. He's coordinator for the Barnstable County Regional Emergency Planning Committee. Hi, Sean.
Hi, Mindy. How are you today?
I'm great. Things are changing rapidly. What's the latest on how the state and the county are working to curb the spread of the virus?
Well, looking at the numbers this morning, we are at one case in Barnstable County that has been reported. It is presumptive. And what we're doing is we're constantly working with the Massachusetts Department of Public Health, our 15 community boards of health, and and Cape Cod Healthcare, number one, to get information out to people. First and foremost, our website is keeping the most up-to-date information available for the citizens here in Barnstable County. If they go to barnstablecountyhealth.org, they should get the most up-to-date information from both CDC, Mass Department of Public Health. But we're also working with planning, and we're working with the 15 local boards of health. They're going to be the front lines of this, along with healthcare. So one thing that they have been doing for many years is actually putting together, and they have, comprehensive public health emergency plans when it comes to public health emergencies.
Yeah, a lot of people are saying one of the issues they're concerned about is testing. There hasn't been testing available, so we have this one presumptive case, but there are people thinking maybe there are more, and we just don't know about it because not everybody's been able to take the tests.
Right. I think as we start to move along during this week, there's going to be additional testing options that are out there. I think the most important thing was we started to see contract laboratories and private laboratories working with our healthcare facilities, and I think that will take a little bit of the load that was going just to the state laboratory, and should be able to assist where we see more testing opportunities.
Is the county working with other agencies for families who might be experiencing financial hardship or food insecurity?
Sure. I think the Barnstable County administration and the Barnstable County, our commissioners, I think those are things they will be discussing in the future in ways that they may be able to help out.
Are there more resources allocated to the county during a state of emergency? And where do we see the greatest need for increased resources, at this point in the pandemic?
Well, I think for us right now, the most important point is to support our local boards of health and to assist our healthcare system, with Cape Cod Healthcare being the primary one here in the county. So we're looking to assist them and work with them in any way. And so we may see where, some additional resources from my staff or some from our Medical Reserve Corps may be requested or asked to be sent out to the local boards of health to assist with follow-up. We've also been there and assisting with a lot of the planning for our folks over at Cape Cod Hospital and Cape Cod Healthcare.
And you mentioned the website. We'll post a link to the Barnstable County Regional Planning Committee at our website, capeandislands.org. Sean O'Brien, thanks so much for bringing us up to date on the latest. Appreciate your time this morning.
Fantastic. Thank you so much, Mindy. Have a great day.
You too. In studio with us is Cheryl Bartlett. She's a RN, Chief Executive Officer of the Greater New Bedford Community Health Center, former Commissioner of Public Health under Deval Patrick, an expert in infectious disease. Good morning.
Good morning,
Glad
Mindy.
Glad to have
you
here.
Thank you.
You're also about to, I don't know if you're already on this, the State Task Force on Coronavirus and Equity. What is that?
The Mass Public Health Association recognized that vulnerable populations are at a particularly high risk for a lot of different reasons. They often have less healthy population. They have less economic means to take care of themselves. They're being significantly impacted by school closures and daycare. And so we really want to focus on what are maybe the top three priorities that we can present to the legislature and the administration on how to not leave this population behind.
Yeah. And also in studio with us is Jenny Putnam. She's a licensed independent social worker. Welcome, Jenny. Good to see you this morning as well.
You too. Thank you.
All right. So, Cheryl, symptoms we hear mild to severe, and in those severe cases, it could cause someone to need to be hospitalized. We're hearing about deaths, and it's a scary situation. A lot of people, some people have that mild to severe. So tell us this range of what we're seeing with this virus.
So I think what we're seeing is about 80% of people that get exposed to coronavirus and get diagnosed have a mild case of it, which is probably similar to symptoms you'd experience if you had a cold. Maybe have some coughing, sneezing, maybe a low-grade fever, maybe no fever at all. So we're trying to encourage those people not to show up in emergency rooms or at their provider's office and to call in advance so that we can kind of talk them through over-the-counter medications, maybe anti-inflammatories, drinking lots of water, the kind of common things you do for a cold, get a lot of rest. And at some point, there's conversations about testing those people so we can see what the true scope of it is, because we're not sure if it's coronavirus or the flu. We're in the middle of the flu season, so this really kind of confounds the situation in identifying who truly has coronavirus and who doesn't. And the flu, as you know, has way many more cases of it than coronavirus and has caused much more death at this point in time.
And I guess the concern is you may have this mild case, not even know it, and think you have a little bit of a cold, which can be really difficult for somebody with a compromised immune system or your elderly parents. And that's what this whole idea of everybody sort of trying to self-quarantine is, to keep it from spreading to those vulnerable populations, right?
Exactly. Those people are probably fine and nothing will come of their coronavirus, but if they spread it to people in the vulnerable population, which is about 20% of the population, people that have chronic respiratory conditions, people that have complex chronic diseases, people that may be immunocompromised in our elderly population, they're the population most at risk to get severe respiratory conditions, could be shortness of breath. We've seen pneumonia with this, and some cases requiring to be put on ventilators. So there's some concern about our capacity to deal with the really severely ill population. Those people were saying, go right to the emergency room. Don't stop anywhere else. Mm-hmm. And we want to try to keep the less sick people out of the emergency room so the capacity is there to take care of the most sick people.
All right, Jenny, a lot of anxiety. It probably ramped up a little over this past weekend. You know, first we have some school closings, and it's our, you know, only, you know, the essential workers showing up to work. And now we're hearing restaurants and bars being closed. And people are going, wow, what's happening? So talk a little about this anxiety that people are feeling.
Yeah, I think that one of the things that we've seen in the past decade anyway is that news outlets, particularly television news outlets, feed on anxiety and in fact try to be as alarmist as possible so that they can get the attention, so that they can get the money. And that, you know, fair enough. But for us and our anxiety, I think it's important to know the facts, but don't linger on those things. So my advice is often listen to an hour or do an hour of catching up on what's going on in the news and then turn it off. Mm-hmm. And also listen to really sources that you know are reliable. So, I think that NPR famously gives you not only information, but resources. That's a way of having some control over what's going on.
Yeah. I guess the thing is you can feel a little bit out of control in a situation like
exactly
this.
Exactly right. I think that's the biggest thing, is that we feel out of control and that creates anxiety. And also a certain level of anxiety in times like this is appropriate, or worry, I should say, as opposed to anxiety. And so you want to take that worry as a signal to your body and your mind that you need to do something and do those things that everybody has been recommending.
All right, Cheryl, what to do or not to do if you're feeling sick? You sort of touched on this, but we know we have some people who might be a little bit exaggerated, and they go, "Oh my gosh, I've got the sore throat, I've got the temperature, I must have coronavirus," and they kind of, you know, get. And I can understand some people who have high levels of anxiety be a little more alarmed than maybe somebody who says, "Well, this is probably a mild case." So what do? You wake up, you have a little bit of a sore throat, maybe a little bit of a fever.
So most of the healthcare system is trying to get messages out to the patients that they routinely see. For example, at the health center, we serve about 24,000 patients. In the greater New Bedford area, we're sending out messages to them and telling them, if you're feeling sick, before you come in, please call us. Mm-hmm. And then we can triage over the phone. So there's a lot more triage going on over the phone. We're, in fact, calling people that have scheduled appointments and saying, if this is a well visit or your annual physical, maybe let's reschedule that. If you're feeling sick, are you having any kind of symptoms of respiratory distress so that before you come in, we can be kind of ready for that, or tell you not to come in at all if you're one of those mild cases, or direct you right to the emergency room. So more phone triage going on and checking.
How quickly does this escalate, the coronavirus?
Well, it seems like if you're following what's being posted, the Mass Department of Public Health every day posts the new cases. I think they look like they're rising by between 30 and 40 cases a day here in Massachusetts. So I think it depends on the close quarters. I think in a place like China, where you see the crowding of the living conditions, the poor air quality, we're fortunate here that we have a very robust public health system, particularly in Massachusetts, always identified as one of the best public health systems in the country. It may not go that fast, but if people don't stay home, which is why I think it's the wise leadership we've been having to close things down so that this virus has nowhere to go and hopefully eventually dies out a natural death.
And go ahead.
I just want to jump in because I think that reframing fear is another way of helping with anxiety. And so when you're feeling, oh my gosh, something horrible is happening, you can reframe it by remembering that Massachusetts does have one of the best healthcare systems in the country and therefore, I assume, in the world.
Right.
Yeah. What about the latest on testing? You know, who gets tested? Well, you know, we had this, the criteria, I guess, has been changing as we've been going through this. I mean, you've got to remember, this is a new virus,
yes.
Right?
So when these things happen, of course, we all hope that our robust health system in the United States doesn't allow them to come across our borders. And in fact, we see that happen again and again. We saw that with Ebola. And so testing seems to ramp up more slowly than these organisms move around our country. And we unfortunately got a slow start. Some of that was, I think, our national leadership in saying this wasn't going to be a problem. Unfortunately, it is a problem, and public health experts knew that it would be. And I think Governor Baker has stepped up and loosened up the opportunity for testing to take place. But there still are some guidelines that if the test goes through the Department of Public Health, there's like 6 criteria, I believe, to identify someone who's the best person to test. And again, we're trying not to test the worried well to keep our resources for the most sick people as we continue to ramp up access to testing. The private companies have stepped in, but I talked to someone about a private company yesterday, and they told me I could get 5 tests. Well, I have 24,000 patients, so 5 tests aren't going to be all that helpful. So I think it's still something that we're building the system as we're kind of, as they say, building the plane as you're flying it.
And we talk, Jenny, talking about the anxiety, it isn't just about, oh, am I going to get the coronavirus? It's about your health. It's about a paycheck, paying the rent, you know, arriving at the store with empty shelves, not being able to afford food. So there's a lot more here going on than just concerns about our health.
Yeah, I mean, I think that all of those, again, are legitimate concerns. Well, it doesn't sound like the food is actually that legitimate of a concern right now. I was just listening to the show right before this one where they talked to a person in charge of the line of, distribution. And he was saying, this is really not a problem, that those shelves are going to be restocked. So those are the kinds of pieces of information that you want to know. The monetary issues for some people are real. And I think that those are things that those of us who have more can think about. And again, doing something proactive helps with our anxiety. So we, for example, have told our cleaning lady that we're going to pay her regardless of whether or not she can come in, so that we're taking a proactive step, and that reduced my anxiety. Now, that's just an individual thing, and on a larger level, these emergency task force are going to have to really think about and deal with not just the health issues, but the issues of mental health for people who are alone in their homes and really isolated, and the economic impact on the poorest of us.
I think the economic impact is significant because people will go to work if we don't pay them. They won't tell us that they're sick, and they won't tell us they've been a contact of someone with coronavirus. And so I know at our health center, I've made a new sick policy that's public health communicable disease emergency sick policy, and that we will pay people to go home for 2 weeks if that's what we need to do in order to stem the tide of this epidemic. But that's going to have a significant impact. As you know, community health centers work on very thin margins, and we're very scared about the viability of our organization in the long term.
Yeah, and a lot of small businesses feeling the same way. You know, to be able to afford to do that, even if they might like to,
right.
That's a tough situation. You know, the restaurants and bars. If you're a bartender or a waitress, and you know, already living paycheck to paycheck, this is a big blow.
Yeah, right, there's about 300,000 people, I was reading last night on something, that are in the restaurant industry in Massachusetts, so that's going to be a big hit for them.
But you talk about being able to do something locally, Jenny, and you know that kind of we're feeling sort of powerless, and to be able to do something even on a small scale. I've seen a lot of things on Facebook of people who are buying gift certificates at some of the restaurants and even some of the small businesses. They're like, you know, shop local, even if you can't shop right now, you know, trying to help keep some of these businesses afloat. And I would think that's sort of empowering as well.
Absolutely. That's a brilliant idea. Any of those little things that you can do, call anybody you know who lives alone, call everybody you know, and as you're sort of socially isolating, and have some social contact, because as mammals we really need each other. There's this whole idea of the cuddles for survival, and so I think all of those little things that you can do are going to make you feel more in control.
Now, was it Mr. Rogers' mom used to tell him in emergencies, look for the helpers? You know, when you're feeling overwhelmed, look for the helpers. They're always there.
Well, and there's also this thing where when you help other people, you care more about them. And so this is actually a time to build community. This can really tighten up our communities in a way that can last for generations.
Yeah. Right. Nurturing is a bidirectional need. We need to
give
to people, and we need to get from people.
That's exactly right.
You're listening to The Point. We're discussing the latest on the coronavirus, how to keep it from spreading, supports and services to help those in need, and how to cope with the stress and anxiety associated with the virus and the economic impact. 866-999-4626 is our number. Our email address is thepoint@capeandislands.org. And Jenny, you just said something, that anxiety is also contagious.
Right. So we were just talking about how to soothe each other within the context of a community, and I wanted to comment that we could do the opposite and just increase each other's anxiety, that anxiety is also contagious. And I want to warn people against passing along, you know, false information or unsubstantiated information, and try to stay as calm as possible when talking to each other, even if internally you're not feeling so calm.
And calm in front of children.
Absolutely calm in front of children. There's famously studies in London about how the children who were in London through the Blitz did well because of that British stiff upper lip, and that they weren't afraid because their parents didn't seem afraid. Mm-hmm. So the parents didn't always do so well, but the but the children did really well.
Yeah, we have an email from Gwen who says, can your speaker post the public health emergency sick pay policy? I'm a nonprofit leader and would welcome a model to work from for our organization.
It's not a statewide policy. It's a organizational wide policy that we've implemented. We haven't written it up yet. We're kind of taking it. We've told our employees that if they're out sick or they are a contact, to talk to our HR department, and we will, on a case-by-case basis, get them home and get them paid for up to 2 weeks.
Yeah, and I think what we've done here is all of our non-essential folks are working from home, so they're all still being paid as well. They're just doing as much work as home, so we keep the number of people in the building low.
Yes.
All right. We have Marianne Ryan joining us on the phone. She's the Director of Community Services at Elder Services of Cape Cod and the Islands. Good morning, Marianne.
Good morning, Mindy. Thanks for having us on.
You bet. Now, your group coordinates Meals on Wheels and home care services for the region. Are they still up and running?
Yes, our Meals on Wheels is going out as usual, daily Meals on Wheels. We deliver probably about 10 o'clock to 11 every morning in the community. However, we are experiencing several volunteers who are beginning to show signs that they're a little bit hesitant about delivering meals, and for their own safety and their own well-being have decided to stop volunteering. So we are have been doing a community call out for volunteers.
Looking for volunteers. And have you changed, the procedure? I mean, are you just dropping it off at the door instead of going inside, or are you still
yes,
going?
As of today, we're calling all our recipients for the Meals on Wheels, and it's about 900 folks that we deliver meals to daily on Cape and Islands. And we are notifying that the Meals on Wheels driver will come to the door and knock, and they can wave from the window or they can call out, and we will leave the meal for them. There are some exceptions where we have some folks who are maybe on oxygen or more, not able to get up, that the exceptions are, then we would go into their house. But yeah, we're trying to change the procedure for the safety of the volunteers and for the clients.
Are you accepting new requests?
We are accepting new requests for people who need Meals on Wheels. They have to meet our criteria. Mm-hmm. And one of the main criteria is to be homebound and not be able to prepare a meal over the age of 60. And that would be through our information and referral line.
And you coordinate with Councils on Aging and senior centers in all Cape and Islands towns. Senior centers are closed for programming, but are staff still available to help seniors with needs, be that on the phone or online?
My understanding is from many of the senior centers, or Councils on Aging, as they are called, are open to calls that they would be able to help seniors, in need. We are able to deliver Meals on Wheels. Some of our programs are housed out of senior centers, such as the Barnstable Adult Community Center, and they will remain open for us to do our meals program there.
Mm-hmm. Seniors, of course, at a higher risk for social isolation, and now we're asking them to self-isolate. What are ways the community can step up to help seniors stay connected?
Well, I think one of the huge things, to reiterate what Cheryl said, which was excellent points, is you're talking more of a vulnerable population that is going to experience more social isolation. So if you used to go to a yoga class at the senior center, now it's canceled. Or you used to volunteer, now you're restricting yourself from doing those various things. So I think it's important to reach out to our neighbors. Even if we don't know them, it's a time to reach out, knock on the door, step away from the door maybe, and just say hello and check on them, make phone calls to people, find out if people need help getting groceries or supplies or things like that. Just to kind of do that daily check, I think, is just invaluable.
So if a senior needs someone to grocery shop or to pick up a prescription, someone who's maybe hasn't needed that assistance in the past, do you suggest then that they are reaching out to their local senior center? What should they do?
Well, they can call their senior center. From my understanding, again, several of the senior centers are open to take phone calls and maybe could connect them to more people in their own community, town-by-town basis. For here, we're probably not able to take care of all the seniors on the Cape for those things. But I think, again, the call out is for people to really to reach out to their neighbors. So, let's say the younger neighbors, certainly helping the older population. We've had a lot of phone calls from school teachers now. Their school's suspended for at least 3 weeks or so, and they have stepped up to the plate to call here. We quickly do an application and a Corey check. It's done really in a matter of an hour or two, and they're willing to start delivering Meals on Wheels or help out where they can.
Mm. Any other thoughts or advice you'd like to share?
Just really, we have to think of our neighbors. Just again, what Cheryl said of the people who don't have, people are at record numbers at food pantries, and I think that's just only obviously going to increase with this situation. So if you're able to give and donate, whether it's time or goods, I think it's going to be needed now more than ever. Yeah. Is to just really to get out there and offer help to people.
And we'll post a link to Elder Services of Cape Cod and the Islands at our website, capeandislands.org. Marianne Ryan, Director of Community Services at Elder Services of Cape Cod and the Islands. Thanks for the info. We appreciate that this morning.
Okay, thanks, Mindy.
You bet. Now, one of the other things I was just thinking, maybe some seniors are reluctant to open the door when you're knocking on, but you can talk through, right? And say,
right,
all right, you just want to make sure you're okay. Mm-hmm. You don't necessarily have to be face-to-face, right?
And try to get if we can do phone calls. I mean, I have an 89-year-old mom who lives all alone, and we're all calling her every day, and she's actually, that's making her quite calm, and she's not the most calm person to start with.
Well, it's interesting. I have a 96-year-old uncle who doesn't have any children. I'm sort of like the surrogate child, my brother and I. And he is in New York City, and he was getting a little nervous. And he said, you know, maybe I should come to your house. I said, no, I don't think that's a good idea. We have a 5-year-old in the house. Yeah. Last weekend he called. He said, all right, I'm self-quarantining myself. I'm not seeing anybody. He's not even taking his Meals on Wheels because he has enough stuff in his freezer. But he said, I might be calling you a little more often because it's kind of lonely.
Yeah.
Which, of course, so that's another thing you can do. And for those who have Facebook, or you know, you can FaceTime and things like that.
At our condo community, Falmouthport, we are putting together a tiny little group that's going to be knocking on people's doors and finding out about groceries, mm-hmm. and et cetera. But there's no reason you couldn't do that at any neighborhood. I mean, it happens that we all kind of already have these structures in place because it's a condominium. I mean, whatever it's called. Yeah. I can never think of it. But there's no reason you couldn't do that in every neighborhood. You could go just along your street and knock on doors and make sure everybody's okay.
Oh. All right, Carol Woodbury is the superintendent of Dennis Yarmouth Regional School District. She joins us on the phone. Hi, Carol.
Hi, Mindy. How are you?
I'm good. Now, you've got a great program there of providing meals for children who need that. So what are the guidelines following the school closure? What supports are you able to meet for some of these kids?
Sure. Well, we're in a really kind of fortunate position. You don't always think that way when you know that a lot of your children and families need food on a daily basis. But we qualify for the USDA summer feeding program. So you may have heard in the past that during the summer we offer meals for children out at various parks and schools throughout our two communities. And any child who would like a meal can show up in the summer and get a meal. So because we qualify for that program, and that's because we have above 50% free and reduced lunch eligible students in our district, and we actually have above 60%, and in some of our schools it's greater than 70%. So we are able to put this program in place because of those guidelines, and the USDA is allowing us to activate that program at this time as opposed to waiting until the summer. So that's a really fortunate spot to be in. What we're doing is at each of our schools, we have our food service workers are all in making breakfast and lunch, and we're doing it as what we're calling the DY Dolphin drive-through. Of course, we don't want people to, you know, the whole social distancing thing. Right. We don't want people to be together, so our staff will have their gloves on and all of that sort of thing, and have learned from our public health department and our district nurse about all the safeguards that they need to take while they're handing out the bags. But basically, people are going to drive up. Say you have three children, you're going to get three breakfasts and three lunches in bags, and then be able to just drive away.
That's great. And so I think some of the others,
handling it.
Yeah, I was saying some other schools are doing some similar programs where I think Barnstable, Falmouth, Monomoy, maybe Nauset. So if you want to check in your school district and see, I think that's sort of kind of it's just beginning in some of the schools, I think maybe even today or
sure.
later this week.
Yeah. Our program just started today.
Today,
was our first week off, so we feel pretty good. Yeah. They're out there doing it right now as we speak.
And so now for the students who are off, is there online assignments or classes? How are you handling that for keeping them kind of up to date and on their, you know, academics?
Well, we're not 100% there yet. Yesterday, I had a meeting with all of my principals and directors that are in charge of curriculum and special education services. And what we're doing right now is we're kind of taking this week as like our week of 5 snow days. And if we were to have 5 snow days, we wouldn't be doing education, right? Mm-hmm. So we're just trying to take a little bit of a pause so that we can pull things together in a really meaningful way. So currently we have a Google Doc that's available to our staff. They're sharing ideas, and hopefully by next Monday we'll kind of have an outline that might go something like by grade level. Our students in grades 6 through 12, we have a one-to-one iPad initiative in our district, so they take their iPads home, so they should have those at home. Our technology director is also exploring some options. You know, the Comcast program is there for people who need internet. I've heard in again, I'm going to put this all together for our parents once I get the real, you know, yes, this is really the true thing. But my understanding is that they're waiving the fee, and normally it would be like a $10 a month anyways. And they're putting out something about wireless hotspots and things like that. So we're trying to collect all the information that we can put together and send out to parents about that. But it might go something like this. You know, if you have a first grader, here are some good resources to use. You know, we may have to do something a little different for kids that are in AP classes and things like that, because if you think about it, oftentimes when kids are taking advanced placement classes, they not only is the learning great, but they are also eligible, if they take the AP exam and score well enough, to possibly have a reduced time in college where, you know, they will take that as college credit. And so there's a financial impact to our students as well. So we're trying to look at all the different nuances of, you know, from our special education students all the way up to our advanced placement students and everything in between, and what our kids need.
And what are the protocols families should be following in terms of play dates or social interactions?
Well, almost every day, I feel like I'm writing them a letter or sending them a voicemail. But I want everybody to just stay home. Mm-hmm. Please just stay home. Stay with only your own family. Don't go out if you don't have to go out. You know, and it's going to be hard on families because, you know, little kids don't understand this, and they want to go to the neighbors, and they want to go to the park, and they shouldn't be in the parks. They shouldn't be congregating in the neighborhood. If we're going, the reason that the governor closed school, I'm sure everybody knows this, but the reason he did that was so that people could kind of like self-isolate, which I know you were talking about earlier about our seniors. Same thing with our kids and just staying home. If we don't stay home, we might as well come to school because we're not going to be helping the situation.
Exactly. And there are so many things available online. I've been amazed at some of the different things. And yesterday we had our grandson live streaming with the New England Aquarium with Myrtle the turtle. And, you know, they're feeding and learning about turtles. I saw something on Facebook yesterday about the Cincinnati Zoo doing something. I think yesterday they were feeding the hippos. Or there's just all kinds of things that and a lot of, you know, resources that normally charge are putting things up for free. So there is a lot out there that you can look at. Carol Woodbury, Superintendent Dennis Yarmouth Regional School District. Thanks so much. Thanks for all you're doing. Appreciate that. You're listening to The Point, and we are talking about the latest on the coronavirus, how to keep it from spreading, supports and services to help those in need, and how to cope with the stress and anxiety associated with the virus and the economic impact. In studio with us is Cheryl Bartlett. She's a nurse and chief executive officer at Greater New Bedford Community Health Center, former commissioner of public health under Deval Patrick, and she's also an infectious disease expert and on the State Task Force on Coronavirus and Equity. I will spit that out. And then also in studio, Jenny Putman, licensed independent social worker. 866-999-4626 is our number. That's 866-999-4626. Our email address is thepoint@capeandislands.org. So we've been talking a little about the anxiety and the fear. And Cheryl, how well equipped is Cape Islands and South Coast to deal with a pandemic? Is it just a question of numbers? How many people actually get ill? What are your thoughts on that?
I actually think one of the fortunate things we have here in Barnstable County is that we still have county government. If you recall, there used to be 14 counties that had county government, and over time there was a lot of question about whether it was duplication, and many municipalities voted to disband their counties and didn't codify county government. And having a county makes it so much easier to deal with something like this, because you can take resources and spread them out regionally, where otherwise in Massachusetts there's 351 cities or towns, each with a health department, and mostly not with enough resources to address a public health epidemic like this. Mm-hmm. And so regionalization is something that we lost with losing our counties.
Yeah, so this is where it really is important for the administration to set the tone, right?
Correct.
Yeah. And Jenny, we're talking about this, we can get so overwhelmed. So some of us, we're working from home, we've got kids home, we're worried maybe about our elderly parents who may have some health issues. So easy to get overwhelmed. What's your advice on how to you know, feel like you've got some control or not fall to that that feeling?
Well, there's lots of ways to feel like you have control. I mean, you have to choose what your thing is. So if it's making a list of people that you need to call in case there's an emergency, for example, or, you know, my closets are getting very, very clean. Mm-hmm. Going out into the garden, you know, I know that it was just said not to go outside, but I think in your own backyard
you can
is okay.
Your yard.
Yes.
Yeah.
But also, you know, the anxiety is anxiety is anxiety. It's not necessarily unique to the pandemic. And so any of those things that you hear about that help with anxiety, and I often like to think of the five senses, music that makes you feel calmer, something that some smell, like the smell of coffee, calms me down. Visually, if you look at something beautiful, I drove here by way of the ocean so that I can remember that the waves are eternal no matter what happens. Mm-hmm. What am I forgetting here? Touch. So something soft that you like to touch, something like mm-hmm. that. You know, anything like that. And also just mindfulness. I know that's like the word of the hour, but it really helps. So in that moment when your kids are running around the house screaming, or your parents are saying, oh my God, I'm not ready yet, whatever, you feel your thighs on the chair and you feel your feet on the ground and you take a deep breath. Mm. And a strange little tip that I learned recently is if you create saliva in your mouth. So if you think about it, when you get anxious, your mouth goes dry. So think about a lemon and create saliva and your body says, oh, everything's okay. Yeah. And you feel a little bit calmer.
I have a mom who told me her trick for getting the kids to kind of calm down is she goes into the bathroom and screams at the top of her lungs. And she says it does amazing things when she walks out. And
yeah.
The kids are like, what?
I would not advise that because that's a fear tactic.
She's like expressing her. Ah!
Right.
Makes her feel better.
If you have to and it makes you feel better, I would say go for it. But I also, that can lead to the kids feeling more
anxious. I would imagine the kids would catch on to that pretty quickly.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah.
All right. Now joining us is Christine Menard. She's Executive Director of the Family Pantry of Cape Cod. Hi, Christine.
Good morning. How are you?
Great. How are you stepping up efforts to ensure regular clients have access to food and then also preparing for the influx of new clients?
Well, right now we've changed our process a little bit. So our biggest concern right now is keeping our volunteers safe and therefore having them available at the pantry. So we've moved to what's basically a curbside pickup where no clients will be allowed into the building, and that keeps them safe and the volunteers safe. And the long story short is they will basically give us a shopping list that we developed for our mobile pantry years ago, and we're just going to incorporate that into the brick-and-mortar pantry where they will give us the list of items that they want. And then our volunteers will shop for their groceries, and then the groceries will be rolled out to the parking lot, and then the clients can then pick up their groceries from the parking lot. And so there's very little interaction between the volunteer and the client, so it keeps that social distancing in place that we're all striving for. So today's the first day. It's going pretty well so far, I'm happy to say. And, you know, most people are very understanding because we're all trying to do the same thing. But, you know, we serve over 500 families a week on a normal week, and we're expecting that to go up exponentially, given the fact that all the kids are home from school.
Yeah.
And also, a lot of people's jobs have been pushed back. You know, so many of our clients are waiting till April to their jobs to begin, and now it looks like they're being pushed back a little bit. So it's kind of a double-edged sword that we're facing.
Yeah.
But so far, so good.
Yeah. Now, Cheryl, this is, I think we're hearing from a lot of the food pantries, they're doing this sort of curbside delivery, and a lot of the restaurants are doing that as well on the takeout, wearing the gloves and just delivering it to the car.
Right.
Health-wise, that's a good practice?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
We're trying to figure out how do you do that in healthcare, and that's a hard thing to do, but we're really trying to triage patients and identify, well, if you're only coming in to refill your medication, do you really need to come into the office in order to get your medication refilled? And thankfully, some of the insurance companies have loosened up their rules, and instead of doing 30-day prescriptions, we can do 90-day prescriptions. Mm. So trying to identify in healthcare, can we do some of that? We're calling it telephonic health now.
Christine, you get your food from the Greater Boston Food Bank, and with the entire state and nation in this crisis, are there concerns about keeping food pantry shelves stocked?
Not right now. I'm on a almost daily phone call with the Greater Boston Food Bank. Fortunately, the supply chain has not been compromised. They're also saying that there's no inherent risk of what's coming into the food bank, which is wonderful. This Monday, for instance, yesterday, we got an additional 25 pallets worth of product on top of the 25 that we got in on Friday. So from a food standpoint, we're looking pretty good. My concern, again, is as some of our volunteers have to leave us either because their own systems are compromised or they have someone at home that is compromised, then, you know, the need for volunteers looks like it's increasing pretty rapidly.
Yeah. So what makes someone eligible to use the pantry, and are you changing eligibility requirements?
So right now what we're doing for new clients is we're basically, if people need, if they need assistance at this point, then they're coming in and they will come up to us at the front of the building. They'll tell us that we're new, and we will provide food for them. We would never turn anyone away anyhow. We do follow the federal poverty guidelines, which for a single person is $24,000 a year, and then for every member of the family, it's another $4,000. At this point, we're just trying to serve people that are in trouble. And so we have no intention of turning anybody away, but we're not doing a full registration for the next couple weeks, hoping that this will subside a little bit. Because some of these folks that are going to visit us will only need us during this crisis, and, you know, then they'll go back to their daily lives. So we won't be doing a full registration, but we will be tracking everybody that comes through the door.
And have you suspended the mobile food pantry at this point, or is that still operational as well?
The mobile is up and running at the COAs that are allowing us. Right now, Chatham is still, they've considered it an essential operation, so Chatham will go off on Wednesday. P-Town, the COA is closed, but they're looking for another alternate option. And then so far, Eastham, Brewster, and Dennis have closed the operation, but I think Dennis is also looking for another opportunity to try to get us in there. So far, only one of the COAs that runs our mobile pantry is operational, and we're trying to get the other two or three others up and going if possible.
And as you mentioned, looking for volunteers and anybody with some fundraising skills, right?
Yeah.
Donations, all of that. Yeah.
I know it's so awful to say, but cash is king.
Yeah.
You know, and we love people to donate, but frankly, I can get more with your dollar than you can because of our relationship with the Greater Boston Food Bank. So if you have a dollar to spend, you know, I can buy four meals, where if you tried to do that at Stop and Shop or one of the local supermarkets, you wouldn't have quite that same leverage. So
good to know.
Cash is king.
Yeah. All right, we'll post a link to the Family Pantry of Cape Cod at our website, capeandislands.org. And Christine Menard, Executive Director of the Family Pantry of Cape Cod, thanks so much. And good luck. Appreciate that.
Thanks so much, Ann.
You
I appreciate
bet.
All the help.
You bet. Thanks for calling. 866-999-4626. Our email address, thepoint@capeandislands.org. All right, so a lot of misinformation going around, right? Not only on our social medias, but it can even be confusing depending on, you know, the different press conferences and, as you're saying, different towns doing different states doing different things. And it can, again, lead to being a bit overwhelmed. Cheryl, how do you deal with the misinformation?
So we have set up, which most health and medical facilities have, what we call incident command, and that we have to follow a very strict chain of command because there is so much incoming information and misinformation, and no one can take an action without going through our incident command system. So we have a team of people. I have medical experts on it. I have nursing experts. I have communication people. So we get our marching orders from FEMA and the CDC to Massachusetts. MEMA and the Department of Public Health, and the Department of Public Health puts out bulletins, and they run their bulletins through regional health and medical coalitions, of which we serve on. And then we take that information, we adapt it to how our operation works, and develop plans and implement them. So we try to, and I'm not very bossy usually, but in incident command, I try to take charge and say we will follow the chain of commands.
Now, we have seen a rise in telemedicine and healthcare providers. Are they ready, especially something as this, are we ready to move in that direction? I mean, there are some things you can do well with
that. The good news is this is going to help us move in that direction, and the next time we'll have that available to us. I think if people already have telehealth set up, they'll be able to use that. We don't have that set up yet, so they're saying we can see people on the telephone. I'm going to get paid probably about a tenth of what I would get paid normally. So, and you can't see the patient, so some providers are skeptical. But I think this will push this technology forth pretty quickly after this.
Yeah. Let's talk to Larry, who's giving us a call from Brewster. Morning, Larry.
How are you doing?
Good.
I have a suggestion. I don't know if this has been brought up, but one of the wonderful things for anxiety reduction is exercise. And I mean, I'm looking out the window now and it's raining. I have stairs in the house, so I can use the original Stairmaster, laps in the house, or walking on the street, things like that. Just wonderful for anxiety reduction.
Yeah, Larry, that's a really good suggestion. Thanks for calling with that.
Exercise and breathing,
right?
Yeah.
Those are the two big things that can solve so many.
Simple, free, exactly.
There's a million yoga things online, apps you can use, yeah.
And distractions, right? We need some distractions,
Jenny? Absolutely, absolutely. That was a great call. Thank you. I had that on my list and I forgot to mention it. Thank you. And, you know, watching, catch up on your movies, catch up on your books, puzzles. There's a million things you can do to take your mind off it.
Yeah.
And turn off the news once in a while.
Yes.
Too much news, an hour a day.
24/7. Yeah. If you're not scared, you can't.
You will
help
be after that.
Scared.
Yeah, exactly. So what does the research tell us about self-isolation and, you know, how that, what that impact is? I mean, obviously, people are thinking this is going to work, right?
Right.
I mean, that's the whole idea. People go, wait, nothing happened. That's the whole point, right?
With an infectious disease, you need an agent. That agent would be the coronavirus and a host, which it can live in and do its deed. And so that's us. And so by removing a place for the virus to go and live and transmit and continue on, then we have this epidemic. So taking the people out of the equation, I think we've seen on the news, this flattening of the number of cases will start to happen. The virus will have nowhere to go and live.
So a good rule of thumb maybe now, behave as though you are infected and you want to make sure you don't infect others. Is that sort of what we're, our thinking is?
I would say yes, as you could potentially be a carrier of this. You may not be symptomatic. Sometimes with infectious diseases, we get exposed and we can transmit it to someone without having an illness. So we might not think that we're capable of transmitting it. And that's why I think this radical sort of closing down of our states that's going to try to stop this from carrying on.
And Jenny, you mentioned we're social beings. This is tougher for some people than others. Others go, oh, great, 2 weeks at home. How great is that? And, you know, this, you know, why the run on toilet paper? Somebody said, why toilet paper? Why aren't the liquor stores selling out? You're going to be home with the kids and your spouse. But it's tougher for some people than others.
Yeah, it is. And actually, I just want to comment on the liquor thing. I would say people should avoid using that as the distraction. Yeah, it's much harder for some people. And for those people, again, I would suggest that you find ways to touch with people. You know, FaceTime is wonderful. Skype is wonderful. Phone calls are wonderful. Go drive down to the beach and talk to each other through your car windows. You know, find ways of talking to people that are not going to pass along the virus.
Yeah. And tomorrow we will continue with this thought about anxiety and fear with our panel of mental health experts. Tonight at 7 and every weeknight, at least for the next couple of weeks, we'll have a live call-in hour in this together, hosted by Arun Rath in Boston, which will offer listeners a sense of community. So we hope you'll tune in for that. Cheryl Bartlett and Jenny Putnam, thank you so much for being here today and
thank
for the
you.
Work that you both do.
Thank you.
I'm Mindy Todd. Thanks for listening.
The Point is produced by Amy Vince. The executive producer is Mindy Todd. Production assistance from Jenny Junker and Dan Tridle. Theme music by Benjamin Verdery and William Coulter.